me. Land spreading out so far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay.
I just adore a penthouse view.
Darling, I love you, but give me Park Avenue.
All right, here we go, everybody.
The chores.
The stores.
Fresh air.
Times Square.
You be my wife.
Goodbye, city life.
Great Acres, we are there.
All the previous episodes of Green Acres or Free Farm Friday are available online at crusademax.com. By the way, I put up Clive and Bundy's How Congress Stole the Power to Snatch Land. It's a 20-minute long podcast we made back in 2014, but it has relevant, pertinent information on it today. It's at the all-new crusademax.com. If you're going to go to crusademax.com, which most of you didn't fork over a single red effing cent for, can you at least do us the signal courtesy as just sort of a thank you, Mike? Thank you, Justin. Can you click the little heart button for heaven's sake? Is that asking too much? Because none of you do it. Why did that matter? It matters. Google is watching. There are literally thousands of hours that have gone into developing that site. And all we're asking in return for you Founders Pass members that were grandfathered in is to click a stupid little heart icon. If I don't see some hearts being clicked, I'm gonna renege on the deal. I'm gonna tell Scott Resnick, hey, how do you unmembernate all of these memberinifying people who refuse to click the heart or the share button? Or the follow the podcast series. That's what the darn button is there for. How do I unmemberinify? Little bit of just, you know, if I came to your house and you fed me, if I walked away and didn't say thank you or hug you, give you a heart, what would you think? Don't make me sick Tommy on you. I'll put Tommy back in the U.S. Marine Corps uniform.
Good luck with that.
And tell him that you're all a bunch of rougarous and send him after you. All right, let's start Free Farm Friday. All episodes available at crusadechannel.com and on the all-new Crusade Max. crusademax.com. Think of it as Spotify for people that don't want to go to hell. John Kerry to peasants. Die to save the planet. From W.M. Briggs. It doesn't seem to make much of a difference whether a man inherits his own money or earns it. Once he reaches a certain threshold of the green stuff, there's a good chance he will begin to equate his own intelligence with the level of his wealth. And then he goes on to say, they just say dumber and more dumb things. Enter John Rambo Carey, who by marriage got his money. Who did he marry, by the way? He married Teresa Hines Carey, who is the heiress to what? Yes, Hines 57, the catch of fortune. Enter John Kerry, who by marriage got his money. But we needn't hold this union against him because he could just as well have earned it himself and come to the same idiotic end. No other theory beyond the one I advance adequately explains his theory that to, quote, save the planet, if we're going to save the planet, we need to shut down the farms, Kerry thundered. Yep, he did too say that. Yes, he did. And he said it sitting next to another man who resisted Epictetus's admonition to reject flattery. That is none other than computer software salesman Bill Gates. Here's the actual quote from the story. Kerry, Biden's special presidential envoy for climate, issued the warning during a Green Agenda conference in Washington, D.C. During the Department of Agriculture's USDA AIM Summit for Climate Summit, Kerry told the audience that, quote, we We can't get to net zero, so we won't get this job done unless agriculture is front and center as part of the solution, close quote. Kerry warned attendees that his and other world leaders' lives depend, this is a quote now, quote, lives depend, close quote, on farmers ceasing their operations. Stopping farmers from growing food will, quote, lower agriculture emissions, close quote. Kerry insists. These lunatics actually want to shut the farms down. Isn't this what the Dutch farmers told us they wanted to do when most of the rest of the world laughed at them or called them a bunch of rabble-rousing, lawless, redneck, hick hayseeds that had, yeah, kind of strange, a funny accent, so yeah. Well, the Dutch farmers were right. The Canadian truckers were right. I've been right for 30-some-odd years. They really want to kill us. They really do want to kill us. How else can you parse, or how else can you process Kerry's statement that in order to get to net zero, we need to shut the farms down? Shut the farms down? Why don't you just come out and say it? In order to get to net zero, the first thing we do is kill all the humans. Except the good ones like us.
The elites.
Yeah, the elites. No, we're not a threat to the planet. Only, you know, people like you are. You know, people that smoke, eat, and drink and are happy. Hey, you're a threat to humanity. You humans are a threat to humanity. We need to get rid of you, so we're just kind of like stop feeding you. You're going to shut the farms down? Yeah. We're going to call it net zero emissions thing, but yeah. Bunch of starving people. How's that going to work in practical and real life? It's going to be like the Hunger Games. They're going to build 30-foot walls up around their little elite cities that we can't get in. They're going to grow all their food in there. Which district are you going to be sentenced to die in? This stuff is real, folks. They hate us, and they all want us dead. So next time someone tempts you to go lick a frog, hump a whale, or hug a tree with them, tell them, no, you're busy eating farm-grown food. Let's go to Brian Koch. Master farmer from Wharton, Texas. When are you going to shut your farm down?
Today. Right now.
Okay. Well, can I get my pickles first before you
Y'all need more already?
You told me to wait.
2 weeks.
Wait a minute. You said we weren't allowed to eat them for 1 week, buddy. Or you said 2 weeks.
They're ready tomorrow. Yeah. We made them. You got to wait. I don't know. That's what the instructions say.
That's what the instructions say. What does the shut the farm down instructions say?
Well, it's all this what we've been seeing with everything else. And, you know, we keep, and I don't know if you are looking at the actual article itself, but look who's sitting next to him in the article.
Look who's. Dr. Death, computer Dr. Death himself, Bill Gates.
Yeah. And what has he been buying up?
Land, farms.
Yeah. So it's not every farmer. It's just every one that doesn't meet our standards. So, you know, it's just an elitist ploy to, I guess, for lack of a better word, like you said, kill us. And... You know, they're going to keep producing, you know, all this corn for ethanol and plastic and whatever else they make out of it. Soybeans for whatever other things they're going to make out of it. And, you know, they're going to run into a problem if they get rid of animals because all this excess, what are they going to do with it? You know, they can't feed it to animals if they're not there. So it's, I don't know. It's all part of this, what's been going on and what you've been talking about and what we've been talking about to get us off the land and basically lower the population of Earth. And, you know, I was in this meeting yesterday and I'm represent my agency on the Coastal Coordination Advisory Council and being coastal and, and everything you have to hear about sea level rise and climate change and all this other stuff. And, you know, they're going through this presentation on sequestering carbon and storing carbon. I'm like, this is stupid. Why aren't we cycling carbon? So it's all...
Well, Brian, one of the things they have to do, and you know this because you have some lingo, you have some nomenclature, that when you're speaking to other farmers, they completely understand what you're talking. So what they've done is they developed this wicked vocabulary of theirs where they run around and they talk about net zero, and that's net zero is supposed to mean something good. But if you went to someone and you said, we want you to have a net zero family. What would the average imbecile out there say? What's a net zero family? We want to sterilize her or you or both of you so you will have a net zero family. You two can live, but we're like the Chinese. You know, the Chinese had a net zero human population problem. And guess what you get when you defy God? But the Chinese have major, major demographic problems that they cannot solve now.
Look at Europe.
Europe has demographic problems that it cannot solve.
And we're next.
Yeah, right. The United States has major demographic problems that it cannot solve here. Here, listen, let's bring my Mitter Monday on here, the old farmer. Here, old farmer, listen to this part of the story. We, quote, we need economic, social, and policy innovation in order to scale adaptation of these technical solutions and get them into the hands of folks in the fields of small farmers on a worldwide basis. This is the promise of the AIM for Climate Summit. Well, the people that did the story go like, no, that's not the purpose. As Slate News has been reporting, examples of this innovation include corporate insect processing factories to replace the public's meat supply with food made from bugs. You're into manufacturing of food. Would they be able to make, on a grand scale, factories that could produce bug food?
Could they? Most definitely. It just depends how many chemicals you want to put into it. I mean, the reality is that they're probably not going to do it in a process that you and I would like, even if we were interested in eating the bugs.
Yeah, would we really care if the bugs were organic? Hey, is that an organic bug burger?
Well, I mean, I'd step back a moment and say they want us to shut down the farms. I'd counter and say they did that a century ago. Or over the last century. So now you're just reacting to symptoms, whether it is deliberate, which I think a lot of us think that there definitely is some of that, or it's just, as most people do, they react to symptoms. They don't actually go back and find the root cause. So why are we reacting to symptoms? Well, you know, maybe because Mr. Gates wants to make money eating bugs. Maybe he believes we should eat bugs. Maybe because they actually have done some numbers and say, you know, the way things are going and how we're destroying land and people, maybe we can't make this happen the way we thought we did. So I wouldn't even begin to understand or suggest that I understand their reasoning. But I will tell you, they shut the farms down years ago. Don't pretend that they're trying to do it now.
Hey, you know what Cooking with the King Dude Farms is producing this year? The first year, we're actually getting cucumbers.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm not talking.
You got to preserve them.
Well, we don't have enough. But wait a minute. Now there's a bunch of them. Let me bring Brian back in because he's in my climate. Brian, there's a bunch of little pickly ones on the vine. We've harvested three so far of the longer and bigger English cucumber variety. There's some more that are hanging on the vine. I'm finding this year that the only challenge that, you know, once I planted them in the bed with the wire mesh around them, gave them some place to go, that the real challenge for us this year has been the rain cycle.
Yeah. Well, we're seeing a shift. You know, last year we were under high pressure for, you know, for literally March until August.
Yeah, for almost 3 months, three solid months.
Yeah. I mean, we were 20 inches behind in rain.
And how is Central Texas doing this year?
It's a little better, but there's still places that are in extreme what they call D4 drought. We're doing a little better. We could use some rain. I would say where I'm at, I might be 2 or 3 inches behind average. But other places it's wetter. You know, it's just kind of how it is. But we have been getting the rain, and it's not as dire of a situation compared to last year. But I did, you know, I did yesterday on my way back, I drove through an area that's been getting really a lot of rain. And I actually saw someone irrigating corn, which made me scratch my head. So I'm thinking, why? Well, it's, I know why, we know why. But, you know, it's just a head scratcher because it's like you've had, you know, a pretty abundant rain to grow that corn. And the corn didn't look like it was stressed to begin with. And so it just, it was a head scratcher. But I mean, you know, we're getting cucumbers. I had some failure on some, so I had to replant and everything. But everything I replanted is looking really good. And so the good thing about cucumbers is if you keep them watered, as hot as it, if it, you know, in the hot summer, they will make, and they will make a lot. So
that's the thing. That's what I was saying. That I'm finding that my big challenge is, and you can see the leaves when you say distressed. What I see in my plants is, first of all, the leaves get droopy. And then after they get droopy, if you let them go for another day, a couple of days, when they after they start kind of wilting, if you will, then they start to yellow. So you had beautiful green leaves that, you know, were supple and were kind of firm. And, you know, if you did get a little bit of a rain, the rain would have hit the leaves, and you can see how, you know, God made the plant, how nature works. It hits the leaf, and then some of it is retained. It makes its way down the spine that the leaf is connected to, and then ultimately it makes its way down to what remains to the ground. It goes into the ground. So you could see the distress on there too. Same thing with our herbs. So we had two rainfalls yesterday. It rained for about a half an hour, stopped for about an hour, then it rained again for about a half an hour. Not a complete and total soaking, but enough rain. And so this is, we're in early June here in Southeast Louisiana. I am, 38 on the latitude, 38 degrees on the latitude, about even with Wharton, similar to where you are. So we're having a better growing season than we are this year. And that's just kind of an update for all of you that follow Free Farm Friday. But just in our own little signal group, in your little Free Farm signal group, you can see the amount of people that weren't growing anything 3 years ago or 2 years ago when you started it are now harvesting their own fruits, vegetables, and even chickens, Brian. So yeah. Free Farm Friday has had an impact, and there are more of us growing food. That's a good thing.
It's a very good thing, and I'm very excited to see it. And, you know, I prefer the regenerative approach, but, you know, if you have the tools that at your disposal to, you know, maybe plow the ground, think of those regenerative principles when you're doing it. You know, still, you know, if you still need to use tillage, use it, but maybe consider a cover crop and other things when you're doing it, and it's going to let, you're going to lessen the inputs you have, because the idea and what I like about regenerative so much is you're not spending money on outside sources to bring stuff in, and you will eventually reach a point, which I am very, in some of my gardens, I don't even need to use outside brought in fertilizer. It's, you know, what's in the soil and, you know, activating soil biology to make things available through compost teas and other things. So it's one of those things that, you know, you have to understand that context and use it in your context. And, you know, if you can get away from it and not till, great. If not, if you still need to use it, I know a guy who's been growing amazing stuff. He tills up every spring, but he's working in his cover crops that he planted through the year. So he's making like a green manure, and he's still building soil. You know, he's turned the sandy type soil into more of a loamy, you know, darker, you know, black soil that we like to see for growing. So, you know, it's very exciting to see. And you know, the more you follow it, the less you have to even use poisons and stuff. You know, we're seeing definitely less insect impact this year than we have in the past. So I think things are really starting to get into balance and everything. So,
well, let's talk about the bugs for a minute, because you got to see this. My mother-in-law and father-in-law have, on their 80 acres, but where their house is, they have erected two towers that serve as little homes, pods, if you will, for birds that are called purple martins. Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting to watch. I could just sit there and marvel at these creatures all day long, but you marvel at the cycle of life. Those birds, at a certain time of day, leave their little pods and fly these massive 250, 300 foot tall circular arcs up in the sky, and they come back and they come back to the nest, and they do it over. They keep doing it over and over and over again. What are they doing? Well, here's what they're doing. They have chicks in the pods. They're flying in the sky because nature's telling them, hey, the bugs are out. And they're flying with their beaks and with their mouths open, and they're catching bugs. And then they're bringing them back to the pod, and they're feeding them to the little chicks here. Now, that is a perfectly natural, appropriate use of bugs. Humans don't run around on the front and place themselves on the hoods of their cars toward the hood ornament or hood emblem with their mouths wide open in order to catch a meal at 30 miles an hour, like the bird is doing. It's unnatural for a human to do it. So just right there, just looking at nature and how nature works, it's natural for that particular bird to eat bugs. In no situation, unless you're on a deserted island somewhere and you got stranded there, is it natural for a human being to eat bugs. I think that makes a pretty reasonable, rational, very easily understandable argument against you will eat the bugs to save the planet.
Yeah, well, if you look at the human population that do actually eat bugs, it's more grubs, you know, the softer, not the exoskeleton like they're, you know, trying to make you do with the chitin in it and stuff. They're eating grubs. And I'm not saying they don't eat scorpions and cockroaches and things like that, because they do. There are, but it's seasonal. It's not all the time. So, you know, there's some things, you know, to consider when they try to do that. But I want to go back to, you know, you talked about the purple martins, and I think Mr. Todd McClure just put in the chat room talking about tree swallows. You know, bats, you know, all these other, they are very efficient at insect control, especially like mosquitoes and gnats and flies and stuff. And, you know, they'll eat, you know, thousands of pounds, you know, these colonies will eat thousands of pounds of bugs in a night or in, you know, in the course of the day. And it's just a good natural, you know, pest control. So yeah, it's, you know, you're thinking out, you know, when you start doing this stuff, you're beginning to do the everything holistically. Everything you do goes to benefit what your, you know, what your end goal is, you know, producing healthy food and abundant food and, you know, doing it all that. So, you know, and you can encourage other insects that eat other bugs. You know, I was watching a video from one of my favorite guys, and I keep yellow jackets and wasps, the paper wasp around, because they naturally control caterpillars in gardens. Some of y'all might be familiar with the big, nasty, giant tomato hornworm that'll eat a tomato plant in the night. Mm-hmm. Every time I see one, it's usually gone within a few hours because one of the wasps have found it and killed it and eaten it. So
I stopped killing the wasps.
I mean, I'm not saying
I was a wasp terminator. You're terminated.
Around your house, you know, in high traffic areas, you know, and if you don't want to kill them, you can spray them with water and stuff, and they'll eventually move away because they're like, somehow it's raining here. I need to move. So, I'm not gonna scold someone for killing a wasp. I mean, it's just you got to become, you know. You know, have a comfort level too, and especially you have kids and stuff. And there's nothing worse than a kid getting stung by a wasp. So, you know,
there's nothing worse than Maggie getting stung by a wasp. Let me tell you.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
Let's bring Mitter Mundy back in here. Mitter Mundy, the Kochs are flirting with the idea of raising turkeys again, something that you have done for years, just switching gears a little bit here on Free Farm Friday here. What would you tell your brother farmer, Mitter Koch here, about raising turkeys?
Turkeys are very delicate in their first few weeks, much more so than chicks. They tend to be a little more susceptible to changes in temperature, and they just are even dumber when it comes to pile on top of each other so that they can kill who's ever underneath. So make sure you have pretty decent. I go back and forth on a lot of this, guys, because I've been trying to do a little bit of hatching here now, and I've not had as good a success this year as last year, and I'm not doing it well, and I'm looking at some other things as far as temperature control and all. But I sit here and I say, okay, I'm trying to get, you know, a very high percentage hatch rate. Nature may not always do that. On the other hand, I just don't believe the temperature is as consistent as you might think sitting underneath the bird in nature and the wind is blowing. So there's got to be some happy medium here. You know, I'm not a hatchery trying to get 98% hatch rate, but, you know, better than 50 would be good. That being said, I have no, turkeys have always been a little bit more difficult. Make sure you got enough space and make sure you got pretty decent temperature control. Otherwise, they just seem to like to die. It's one of those things. But once they get big, they're a lot of fun. You know, big body, little tiny brain, and they just seem to be some of the most curious domestic animals we have, as far as coming up and say, what are you doing? What's this over here? Can I get into this? I mean, they're just very amusing.
Interesting stuff. Yeah. Okay, Brian, you got some advice on growing your turkeys, but it's you already know that the turkeys are more delicate than the chickens.
Our problem was last year, we had a pack of dogs come through and wipe them out. There was no, they were 2 months from finishing, you know, they were going to be ready at Thanksgiving, you know, type of deal. And that was our issue. But yeah, we've actually made it past the first, I think we're about almost a month in on these, and they're, we've lost a few.
But Brian, tell the audience, this was a significant loss that you and Suzanne endured. It was like $3,000 that the dogs killed.
Yeah, it was turkeys and chickens and egg layers combined. And yeah, it was pushing $3,000. So it really cut into my Lone Star beer fund.
So you didn't have the pallet of Lone Star laying around that you
had? No, not like a usual. So I had, well, I've since switched to Shiner because I gave up being a cheap bastard for Lent, and and it's continued. So
you're saying Lone Star is cheaper than Shiner?
Yes. Yeah.
By the way, folks, one of the things that we learned over Memorial Day weekend with the Koch family visiting us at Walsden and West was that Shiner Bock, the Spetzel Brewery, makes all kinds of different varieties of beers, and now they're even making, gins and vodkas?
Yes. I think Memorial Day weekend was their inaugural run on that, and I haven't been over there to try it out, but we'll see how it is. I know they've done some things, but you know, I've been enjoying Shiner beer for.
Okay, I have an actual Free Farm Friday question. This might help some of our other farmers out here, and it's going to apply it to. And by the way, I can see the difference. Maggie can vouch for this. We can see the difference in our beds now. In our little, they're not really raised beds. I mean, they got some wood around them, but the wood's 15 years old. I can see the difference in the raised beds after the second season of cover cropping them in the winter. So last year was good and there was some great production, but you could see in the other two beds then that were cover cropped. You can with your own eyes, you can see the difference in what is being produced in what comes out of those beds. And it's beautiful sight. Here's the farming question, Mr. Koch. So today, or this afternoon or tomorrow, I'm going to go whack down what remains of my 2.5-3 foot tall broccoli trees. I will get some florets, not many, because it's just too hot. Most of these just sprouting. I'm getting broccolini, and it wants to go to flower and then to seed, right? So, number one, do you know of anything that we can do with stalks? And if you don't, then should I just dig up that ground a little bit and just bury the remaining broccoli plants from whence they came, and then go behind with my okra seed? Because I'm going with okra. I have the seeds are already have little squigglies on them, and they've been wet for about a week. So what is your master farming advice?
Whatever you finish harvesting, just chop it up and let it compost back into the soil, and then go in and plant right behind it. That's what I do. I just basically chop and drop it and go on to the next thing. So,
okay. So, Mitter Mundy, same question for you.
If you like broccoli, I would take some of the stems, peel them, boil them up, put them in your food processor or whatever, blend them real good, and then put them through a strainer, and you've got either a great broth right there or some put a little cream in it, make a soup, put a little chicken stock with it.
We love broccoli.
I mean, unless you've got 500 stalks, I mean, I agree with Brian. Put a composted back right into the ground. But if you like a few of them, just grab a stalk or two, peel off the real hard stuff. I mean, if you got some really old, crusty, fibrous stuff, don't waste your time. But if you got, I'm not near the top half of it, take some of them, and you're going to have to strain it. You're not going to want to eat what you get, because it's just, unless you really like to chew. strain the fiber out, you'll get a decent, we'll call it a broccoli stock, and then you can do whatever you want with it.
Okay, so boil the broccoli and then strain it, and then use what's in the strainer goes back in the ground or goes in the trash.
Yep. Oh yeah, and put that right back out. Well, I'd give it to the chickens or the pigs or something. Well, yeah, it'll get recycled in some method. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, sounds good. We're gonna have to wrap up here. Another Free Farm Friday. Anything else happening up in Jersey that you want to wish to alert our listener? Anything else out there that you wanted to mention? We have a couple minutes left.
No. We're starting to go. I mean, it looks like we're going to a very dry season ourselves. If you look at the state map, for whatever it's worth, we're about 3 inches in the great county of Hunter Don behind where we should be with rain, and it's starting to tell. As a matter of fact, I'm getting a load of hay tomorrow for the winter, just because I want to get it while it's gettable, but. And I was planting some stuff in the garden last night, which I'm probably late. But a week ago we had nights down, it was 38. And I know people that have lost stuff up by us. So, I mean, it's been all, we've had these great days. Oh boy, it's 70 degrees. And tonight it's 38. Oh, that's no good. Unless you're going to, you're going to say you're going to willing to replant, you're willing to, put up a high top, which is kind of like an unheated greenhouse. You want to go to some measures. If you just want to plant, cover them. Well, that doesn't always work. You find out, say, gee, I did all this work, and I'm no further ahead than my neighbor who just planted it 3 weeks ago. So, it's a crapshoot with some of that stuff. But, yeah, actually, I'm very happy with the condition of some of my soil this year. I was digging in last night. I really said, this is actually pretty nice. So that's all I got, is trying to catch up on that, and I got a lot of manure to shovel and chicken to kill.
Poop shoveling has never been in short supply on the Mundy Ranch, has it?
No, not when there's ways I could make it easier on myself, but why would I want to do that? That would require capital, and I'm not putting the capital in right now, trying to make do with the way it is. But my turkeys don't show up. Brian, you got turkeys already. You must like 50-pound turkeys at Thanksgiving. I can't get people to buy them big turkeys, so I got to have them in stages, and I won't get my first ones for another couple of weeks yet.
Everybody wants the 12 to 15-pound variety, Mitter Mundy.
I know. That's what. Yeah.
We do pasture raised, so they don't get as massive. I think the biggest one I've done is about 20 pounds. So,
yeah, I mean, I do a little. I mean, they do a kind. I think they do a little of both. But I mean, yeah, they do get about a bunch of feed, and I let them out and wander around for when I'm there to watch them. But if I'm not careful, I do have people who want the 25 pound turkeys. But the trend has been more to this 12 and 15 pound, which people don't understand. It's like, well, gee, if you want one that small, I got to charge more per pound. You don't get it. My effort and my investment is the same, whether, you know, very close to the same, whether I let it grow to 15 pounds or 20 pounds.
Well, when we were getting him as part of the Monday Thanksgiving donation, we were getting the 22 and 23 pounders and 24 pounders. The thing with that is you have to have an oven big enough. I could fit it on my 22-inch Weber. I could smoke it. So then that would probably be the way. But you need a big oven to cook one of those birds, sir. Those things are massive. It's like trying to cook a quarter of a whole hog.
Yep, true enough. But, hey, you know, that's part of the challenge, man.
It is.
Well, as I said, you got it out there in the smoker. That's what you say. You see me. I sit out there. I sit at the computer, and I put on Green Acres. And, you know, after a couple hours, I want to start too early. The bourbon comes out, and the cigars come out, and I'll sit there all day and smoke a turkey.
then the bourbon comes out. All right. Well, we're going to leave it there. This is conclude another episode of Free Farm Friday here on the Mike Church Show, and we'll pick it up again next week, gentlemen. Thank you very much.